focused on a very specific income solution, very specific asset classes, very specific purposes, very specific targets. You know, last week we covered a lot of different income ideas for people who are seeking income in retirement, whether it was CDs or money markets or it was MLPs or maybe it was some other type of investment. We also talked very briefly last week about different types of real estate income. And again, this is a question we get a lot from people is it time to do real estate again? And so I'm really glad you're going to be talking with Dani Evanson right after this, because this is her area, is real estate investment. So I'm glad that our listeners will have a chance to hear a little bit more from an expert in the field about what's going on in real estate and how you can invest in real estate right now.
All that coming up right after this. At a time when interest rates are at zero and likely to remain there for some time, investors are scrambling for yield. So where do you go to find a decent return that's going to keep you up with inflation? Joining me on the program is Dani Evanson. She's Managing Director of RMA Real Estate Investment and Advisory Services. Dani, I want to begin with something that has transpired over the last couple of years. A lot of well-to-do individuals are now looking outside the bond market and the stock market, and they're looking at real estate again. What do you think's driving this?
Oh, by far, it's the lack of interest elsewhere. With respect to the rest of the portfolio, when yield is being compressed the way it is, people are seeking it in alternatives. And one of those alternatives is definitely going to be real estate.
Now, one thing about real estate, as opposed to, let's say, if I buy a stock or a bond, if I don't like it, or if I need money, I can, you know, press a button and 3 days later, I have my money. What I found rather surprising in some of these surveys that they've been talking about, investors are willing to forego some liquidity for these higher rate of returns. Obviously, if I buy an apartment unit, I buy a commercial building, I don't have the liquidity that I have with a stock or bond.
That is true with the illiquid portion of a real estate portfolio. But in today's market, there are alternatives to illiquidity. So there are liquid products, a whole host of them that have pros and cons associated with them that are now offering the consumer a liquid option.
Now, Dani, are you talking about things like REITs that are listed on the stock exchange that, you know, I can get REITs in commercial property, I can get them in multifamily units or even retail properties? Are you referring to that?
That, along with products from some institutions that are providing private funds with redemption options. So what that mechanism offers is a lockout for either 30, 60, or 90 days, but does provide an ability to exit in a short manner. So there's multiple options for liquidity, whether it's the public markets and equities, what you've described, but also alternative funds, vehicles that have options for exit.
Well, it's really surprising that a lot of money is going into this area. And you talk about there's sort of two strategy camps within the real estate market. There are clients who are looking for, let's say, cash flow, low-risk properties, which would include, let's say, multifamily apartment buildings, assisted living, or industrial space. And then there's the other camp that are looking for value-added, high returns of investment, things like development projects or turnaround opportunities. Contrast those two, and what kind of investor gravitates to either one?
Sure. The two camps that we describe and the one that you mentioned are really in those two, and we haven't seen a blend. So we don't have a client, at least in our shop, that has asked us to define yield but yet have a portfolio allocation towards opportunistic and value add, which typically do not have yield in the first 3 years of a hold period. So what we found were clients were, as you mentioned, gravitating to one or the other. So let's describe the client attracted to yield. They are looking for alternatives to the bonds and fixed income portions of their portfolio. They're attracted to the property types that you've just mentioned. The other camp, or what we define as higher risk and longer term investors, are really looking for capital appreciation and putting their money to work for a longer period of time, but have the expectation of definitely higher returns. So when we have a cash yielding client interested in real estate, their real estate overall target portfolio return is going to be lower than that of someone who has a higher risk tolerance.
And you don't really see crossovers. It's almost like it would be two types of investor, income investor, growth investor.
Absolutely. And then there's those clients that have a general balance, but it's rare to find them attracted to a lower return and a cash component. I mean, we really are seeing a bifurcation of interest when it comes to the real estate.
Now, just looking in the article I read about, you've got about 28% of your portfolio on what I call multifamily properties, followed by offices, 18%, retail, 12%, and maybe land development, 3%, and the least, storage. Tell us a little bit about your thinking and what's driving that.
Well, our portfolio has been created over the last 15 years. So having a snapshot today of our current allocation is not necessarily indicative of where we would put our capital today and what we find to be attractive opportunities. But regardless of what period we're in, diversification is critical. So we focus on continually providing our clients a diversified portfolio, and then we turn the dial up or down on certain strategies given market conditions. So, for example, multifamily is really heated today. We find that the pricing is very aggressive, and to really find an opportunity in multifamily, we have to be incredibly particular. Whereas 2 years ago, multifamily was a great opportunity, a lot of great buys, interesting markets and basis that we were attracted to.
You know, it's amazing as you look at how wealth has been built in this country with people starting their own companies or in real estate, that the wealthy are going back to getting direct stakes in brick and mortar again, which is kind of funny because you think about what's happening in e-commerce that is moving away from brick and mortar.
It's true, but bricks and mortar are not just office. So bricks and mortars include so many other occupancies. We cover the gamut of product type. So people are always going to have to live in bricks and mortars, and they will have to hold inventory in bricks and mortars and ship and cold storage. And the aged will always have to be in senior homes. So there's a lot of other bricks and mortars that define the communities other than office, which I agree, e-commerce is definitely changing the way that they occupy office product.
You know, something else that this article on real estate talked about that's a trend, it's called clubbing. Can you explain what clubbing is, where various wealth offices or wealth management offices sort of pull their resources together on projects?
Sure. That's what we do. We provide a clubbing mechanism. Clubbing is, for just a different description, is whereby you aggregate a few investors, so a handful, to have purchasing power and provide equity into a transaction. So there's a couple of different types. What we've seen in the marketplace, certainly in the last 3 to 4 years, are real estate family offices raising capital from other family offices, particularly non-real estate family offices, and acquiring and developing real estate through that syndication model. Then there's groups like RMA. So RMA clubs its underlying clients together to provide equity to local operating partners. And so if you have a client that has a few million dollars to deploy in a single asset, and you have a few of those clients, you have upwards to $10 to $15 million of equity, which can actually acquire a larger piece of real estate, a more institutional piece of real estate. So that clubbing provides access and purchasing power.
Now, one of the things about real estate trends, we have seen an uptick in real estate prices here over the last couple of years, especially with the low mortgage rates that we've seen that are still in place, even though they've risen. But there's also a trend to moving towards foreign real estate. For example, the article talked about opportunities in Europe where they're sort of behind us in terms of economic recovery and the pricing mechanism is maybe more favorable. Do you buy that?
In certain markets, that's true, but certainly not for London or major markets. So if you're in Berlin, that would not be the case. So pricing in core markets have trailed very similar to the ones in the U.S. So, for example, San Francisco's had an enormous uptick along with New York, Seattle, and the same would be true for European core markets. The secondary markets have a lot more room to go as opposed to the secondary markets in the U.S.
Now, another thing that they've said that has been a little bit different in this cycle, because I can remember the S&L crisis where I was able to buy my first office building. Back in those days, Danny, you could go to a bank and if there was a mortgage of a dollar, you could give them 60 cents on the dollar. In this latest era, I guess maybe the lessons learned from the RTC era was not to give away valuable assets for cents on the dollar. And I noticed that even in short sales here, banks, even though they're sitting on foreclosed properties, have not been to the point where they just put all those properties on the market, just trying to get them off the balance sheet, wipe them out, but in the process, you know, give away assets at very cheap prices.
Right. We've seen banks dole out sporadically small tapes of assets, and they've really held on to a lot. And to their credit, because of the recovery, their asset values have increased. And for those that are now over a 1.0 or 1x on the debt level are now starting to put them to the market. But again, they're receiving 100% of their debt dollar. So there's been a tremendous shift in what happened in the late 80s and early 90s.
And what about this idea that where the bargains are? We know that, for example, during the real estate bubble, the last decade, you saw tremendous overbuilding in places like Vegas, places in Florida, Phoenix, Arizona, and even here in California. What do those markets look like for opportunity? Are those opportunities gone? Because I know a couple of years ago, we went looking in Vegas and there was hedge funds that were coming in and buying large swaths of property all at once with the idea of bringing them in, injecting the capital, bringing in management, revitalizing the property. Are those opportunities pretty much gone in this market?
They're few and far between. I mean, they're never 100% gone. I think there's always the scrappy investment operator that can find unique deals. But for the most part, it's a very efficient market. And when you have millions of dollars entering into a market at one time, those prices are going to adjust very, very quickly. And those bargains and those steals are going to be nearly impossible.
You know, Dan, one thing that we often hear now about the stock market was up double digits in 2012. It was up one of the best years in 2013. So, you know, stocks aren't cheap, but they're certainly not in bubble territory. How would you define today's real estate opportunities? Would you say they're not cheap, but they're not in bubble territory as well?
You know, that's a hard comparison. I mean, I've never really thought of equities and real estate in those terms before, but one of the factors that real estate enjoys is that the volatility isn't daily like the stock market is. So when you have volatility that's daily, that spread is going to be more dramatic than real estate. So the bubble exists primarily due to the low interest rate we talked about at the beginning of the conversation. But at the end of the day, if the fundamentals are strong, which we perceive them to be, rent growth will continue. So the other drivers besides the stock market and interest rate is GDP and employment growth. So we look at those factors as well. And we would say that there are some markets that have a tremendous amount of capital chasing the same type of real estate, which creates an inflation in the price. And there's other markets that aren't experiencing that.
I was reading an article on real estate where the cap rates on commercial real estate have stood out better. They haven't come down as much as in multifamily. What do you think accounts for that?
A lot of it has to do with the debt level. The rate you can have on multifamily is lower than other commercial product type. So one, the debt's cheaper. And two, there's more capital in the market for multifamily. So it's driven by the amount of debt available to that product type as well.
Do you think the opportunities in multifamily are going to be with us for a while? I was reading an article, you know, you take a look at the real estate recovery. There's less first-time home buyers now because of household formations. You know, John and Susie are coming out of college with 70 to 100 grand worth of debt. That doesn't make them good qualified candidates to buy a first home or have the 20% down. So the rental market seems to have been, at least the people I've talked to, has remained strong. And do you think that's a trend that is likely to stay with us because of these demographic and financial changes?
We do. And also the economics of different research groups would concur as well. I mean, they're forecasting in just a strong market, let alone a core market, 4 to 5% growth per year for the next 3 years. That's a very strong growth rate. In core markets, you can see them above that. In secondary markets, they're trending at 2 to 3%. So the fact that all predictions are trending towards growth, I think multifamily is definitely going to provide a strong investment, but it's really your basis. What are you buying it at?
Well, it seems to me that, you know, there's always been the importance of diversification, and that has applied throughout the history of investing. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. And if you're looking for returns, you know, there was a gravitation to the bond market coming out of the crisis. Now there seems to be a reflection, especially by those of means, that, you know what, owning some brick and mortar, some real assets makes a lot of sense. Danny, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work you guys do at RMA, how could they do so?
They can start by looking at our website at www.rmare, which stands for the realestate.com, and they can find our contact information there.
Well, listen, Danny, thanks so much for joining us on the program. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Well, that concludes this week's Lifetime Income Show. Rather interesting at a time when everybody's searching for yield. Well, it comes back to different asset classes. Not surprising, real estate being one of them, where the yields are actually much better than anything you can get in the bond market. Well,